What's up, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Stacker News Live. I'm your guest host, Bitcoin Club Dev, and I'm here with Keon, my good friend, and we're going to look at the top Stacker News stories for this week. Didn't mean to dox you there.
Coop.
And we're going to have, I'm going to be opening us up and making sure we're live. I think we are live, and
Yeah,
go ahead and check, Jana. Yeah.
Okay.
And we're going to go through the top stories, and then Pleb Poet is going to get on, and she's gonna take us home. I'm going to lift us off. I'm going to lift us up. Some uplifting messages.
Is this an EDM festival? What is this?
I don't know. Okay, cool. Sweet. So we're live. How's your week?
My week. My week is good. I had a burrito today. Which was good. It was like, I did this.
Was that like the highlight of your week?
It was one of the highlights, because what I do is there's this place called Cabo Bob's in Austin. I get what I call a surf and turf burrito.
Okay.
Where it has steak and fish in it. They have great fish tacos. So I have them put the fish in a steak burrito. And I'm very proud of that. That's like my invention. I think they could go very far on a surf and turf burrito if that was like their main item. Anyway, what else happened? I have beer. Stacker News has a memory leak, so I've been trying to patch that. But otherwise, that's my week. How was your week?
Okay, cool. It was good. I did not get a burrito, but sure. Nonetheless, it was still a good week. I got a beer.
Oh, cheers. I mean,
yeah, cheers.
It's a good week's.
Man, yeah, I don't know. It's just been busy. A lot of interesting tasks, a lot of interesting news. I find myself shifting my focus back and forth between things, which is maybe not ideal, but it's at least fun and exciting.
Yeah.
I don't want to call it a hiatus or a break, but I've definitely been spending less time on Stacker News lately. So I'm excited to look into these stories. We're excited to read the stories today, the top stories, and hopefully come back with a boom next month.
Bang.
The bang. Whoa.
Yeah. We got our lighting.
How's
intern.
That look? I think that looks good.
Figuring it out.
This is my good side, so yeah.
Is it? Which one? Your right side?
Well, the side without a lump on my face is generally...
Why don't you just get it removed?
The good side. Well, I don't know what it is.
It's a cyst.
It's
a cyst. Just get it removed. They cut it open. They pull it out.
Yeah.
It's a yellow sac. Yeah.
Yeah.
It could be like part of your brain. And it could be really important.
People don't point it out very much. They don't notice it.
Could be like a scent glam, you know?
Yeah. A twin.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Don't you want to know if you have a brother? Another one? or a sister. I guess it could be a girl.
I suppose so. Like maybe it like bumped me up from like 80 to 85 IQ or something like that.
Yeah, maybe you just like over as you grew up, you like ate it, you know?
Yeah, absorbed all the nutrients. Left all the seed oils. That's what's left. It's just like canola oil.
Your canola oil brother.
Episode title right there.
Canola oil brothers. Canola oil conjoined twin. that'd go far. People click on that.
Yeah. Okay, well, I suppose let's get into the top stories.
Let's suppose it.
Do we do AMAs for top stories?
We don't do AMAs.
We don't do AMAs.
We consider them meta, but we can, we had a great AMA with Geyser this week. Next week, Monday, 12 p.m. Central Time, we're going to do one with Oscar Mary from Fountain. And, Friday is with, DeMarco, a Bitcoin movie guy.
Okay.
Bitcoin movie maker.
Bitcoiners. Which one did he make? Max DeMarco.
Max DeMarco. Yeah, I don't know.
Did he make the Noster?
We can ask him on the AMA.
Okay, well, we'll ask him in the AMA next week.
That's what I recommend. Oh.
And there's also Mac DeMarco. Is he a Bitcoiner? Probably not. Well, we'll get him. Mac, if you're watching, get on Stacker News. So I guess that means our top story for the week is Why Not Pass Out Cashew Nuts for Halloween This Year by Jason B. I think a good answer might be allergies, but
Cashew with a U.
Yeah. So, Jason B, he talks about how I'm way into Halloween. I asked Keon what it's about. Keon, what's this about?
Well, that's what Carr does. I don't really
I just
care.
Like, I read it, but it's just, whoosh, it just went right over my head for some reason.
Oh, I see. Jason B is really into Halloween. He's probably one of like the neighbors that people like gawk at their house during Halloween. And he has a dope organ.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, cobwebs. Yeah, of all like furniture piece instruments and organ, I think it's probably at the top of the list for me, one that I would like to have. I don't know how to play musical instruments, but I might learn just to get an organ. Yeah, and he has a bunch of, he's going to have some friends who are great players of keys, as he calls them, come and play spooky music during Halloween. And he usually gives out full-size candy bars, which I think he's still going to give out this year. But in addition, he's going to give out cashew notes for kids to give to their parents, and hopefully their parents redeem them. He forked cashew and set up a domain, snickerbar.me. And that's where these notes are minted at. And it's pretty, it's a fun idea. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I was looking at this earlier. I should have, I'm familiar with Jason. We're buddies. You could say we're buddies. And what he linked here is his repo, which is a fork. And I looked through the commits. And I saw a woot woot amount it. So I'm like, all right, this guy's definitely a pleb dev. I love to see it. So I'm not sure exactly what he forked here, but he's a notorious, just hound of going into existing code bases and forking it for his one super specific use case, which is like really cool. And he always shares it and explains why and explains like the fun idea behind it. And I don't know. This is something that inspires me because, like, he can take just kind of the cutest little idea and get excited about it and use it as an opportunity to, like, learn a new technology and build something. And he talks about that a little bit. Like, he wasn't that into cashew. Thanks, Blockchain B, for dropping nuts every day in the saloon. This is what made me curious about cashew in the first place, which I'm just so into right now. So that's kind of cool to see. Like, I didn't know that was happening on Stacker News. Like, people are already sharing these cashew tokens. And so if you don't know, I think this is one he shared just as, like, an example. But this cashew token, basically this, I can't zoom in. This string right here is, like, the token. And it's this bearer token where if you paste this string into your cashew wallet, you'll basically be able to claim those sats from the mint. So it's a little bit like an LNURL withdrawal or something that you can pull from. And I imagine this QR code just allows you to scan it directly from the wallet app. And it's a nice little what do you call it? Book.
It's also a bookmark.
Bookmark.
It doubles as a bookmark. It's bookmark shaped. Blockchain Boog, he puts a cashew note in the Stacker News Saloon every day, I think for like 1,000 sats. Mm. And people have like botted it. So like there is a competition among bots to get to redeem the cashew note every day when he posts it. Because I think he posts it manually.
Wow.
I know you've spent a lot of time with eCash stuff.
Yeah.
Is this, how do you feel like this is as a use case is for eCash notes, because it seems like it's really leveraging the, from what I can tell, like the main UX advantage of cashew note of like eCash in general.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious how the UX is actually supposed to go with this, right? Because So happy Halloween. This one's for the parents. Okay, go to cashew.me and scan this QR code. Okay, so that's a pretty easy flow, right? You're going to this easy URL.
Yeah.
I think when you pop up on cashew.me, I don't know if they make you do anything confusing, like choose a mint or something like that. I think they might make you do that. But I think that, this is definitely like leaning in the direction of of smoothing out the UX of just getting sats into someone's hand and giving them that magical moment of like, poof, it's there, right? Digital money just somehow moved from someone else's wallet into my wallet. But something I think is like, I don't know, that I'm super interested. Like, I think the advantages of eCash are not on the custodial side necessarily, not on the security side necessarily, but it's where I think eCash, I was telling this to Carr the other day, and he was not hearing me out like I wanted him to, but it's like, I think it helps solve that last mile problem with Lightning, where the last mile might be running a node, having a self-custodial Lightning wallet or something like that, just being able to receive the payment, having a Lightning address. These are those last mile moments where it's like, oh, if you just do this and this and this, you can have a great Lightning setup, but no one's ever going to do that. But then it's like with cash, you can just skip a lot of those intermediary steps and give someone that experience of having a non-zero balance just like that, and having a send and receive button. It kind of just works.
It's sort of, because it's a bearer instrument, it's basically authentication. That's token is authentication, your authentication mechanism for the money, for money at the mint that you can exchange for Bitcoin at some point. So it's almost like giving someone a wallet of Satoshi account and a QR code, like in terms of UX. That's basically, because it's really just that authentication of money. I mean, because really the eCash is mostly touted as a privacy enhancement to custodial like banks and things like that. But it seems like UX-wise, just having a token for authentication is really where the advantage is outside of the privacy. Anyway, yeah, and so that's kind of what this is. He's basically giving every trick-or-treater the equivalent of a wallet Satoshi account just by pulling up cashew.me and scanning this QR code. It'd be nice if the QR code could have cashew.me in it, and
that's exactly what I was thinking. It's like scan it, and it just pulls up in a fully operating wallet.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, something else I wonder is like for the people that onboard this way, I feel like their standards are forever. It's like if your first girlfriend is a 10 or like a 9 or something like that, and it only goes down from there. It's like their first user experience is just this instant micropayment, just works, stupid easy interface. They probably don't know what's happening below the surface.
Was your first girlfriend a 10?
No.
What was her number?
Whoa.
You worked your way up.
To talk about cashew here. a normal like 7.
Okay,
it's like a solid 7.
A Midwestern 7.
A Midwestern. Well, that just makes it worse, right? Like, yeah, Midwestern 8.
Midwestern 8, okay. For sure. Jana. I was just curious.
A real Southern
belle. Actually think this is a great this will be a great UX experience for the person who's scanning this and interacting with Lightning for the first time?
I don't know, because I haven't used cashew.me in a while. I mean, we could probably find out pretty quickly. But really, it's just about that like onboarding. Okay, screw it. Let's do it. Let's go to cashew.me. Cashew.me. Oh my gosh, I already have a wallet here.
You have 410 sats going.
Yeah. Man, I should get those off. Wait, my sats have just been sitting here for 6 months and I haven't been rugged? It's not possible.
Well, you haven't gone to the phase where you can get rugged.
Yeah.
Is where you try to turn them into Lightning.
We're not going to go down this journey, but I was about to go into incognito tab. But it seems like you need to set the mint up front. So that one thing alone is probably a huge hurdle that takes the conversion rate of people accepting the cashew token from like 90% to like 20% or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, a cool project, cool showcase, a nice post. Shout out to Jason B. For those waiting for me to fix the glitch, it wasn't showing the amount of sats and each nut is finished. Okay, nice. Building in public. Cool idea. I'll save myself some time and assume these nuts in the pictures have already been sniped by you or someone else. Wow. Nice meme there. That's super custom. We've got cashew sniping.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Of all the nuts in those pictures, the only two I cashed in were the ones that cut out, and that one's the full page. Okay. So.
Yeah, I think one of them has more money in it than the other ones. It has, like, a longer token.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of cashew tokens being shared here. You have to back up your seed phrase.
Ouch.
For a custodial wallet. I'm just kidding. I'm just throwing shade. Anyway, back to it. The top stories. This is another AMA. But shout out to Koji Higashi.
Yeah, Diamond Hands. What was this about? They have a non-custodial Lightning wallet that uses Breeze SDK. And he got a lot of great. And it has the Sats for Ads concept in it, where you can watch ads, view ads, and get paid Sats to a non-custodial wallet, which I think is the first experience of that, like that of its kind, where it's non-custodial, because I think most other versions of this have been custodial. So that's pretty awesome. And a lot of people ask questions about Bitcoin in Japan. You know, Satoshi, Peter Todd is from Japan. Peter Todd isn't from Japan, but it's because he's supposed to be Satoshi. According to HBO, what else? Oh, yeah, there's Mt. Gox. It was like the first major Bitcoin exchange in Japan.
Mark Karpolis. What's that guy's name? The guy who bought Mt. Gox from the original owner, who had like the samurai swords?
Oh, right, yeah.
I think it was Mark Karpolis. He lived in Japan.
He lived in Japan. Roger Ver, Japan.
Oh.
It should be big in Japan, I asked him a question about that. Lots of other people asked lots of other great questions, but another great AMA this week.
Nice.
Probably. It looked pretty, I saw.
Yeah, saying the recent Bitcoin Tokyo 2024 conference, so it seems like they showed up.
Yeah, they were maybe spoke there or something. I saw Nifty's photos, and it seemed pretty dead to me. She's been TikToking.
Uh-oh. travel vlogging. Okay, research.
This is the second top story. Let's
zoom in a little bit. So this is super technical. Yeah, what is this about, Keon?
Yeah, so this is from Rex Dentron. You see how great Car's job is? Just navigates to a link. Yeah.
I like prepared and everything.
Rex Dentron wrote about virtual sizes of on-chain transactions. They describe their journey of like the motivation behind this being their surprise that the fees that you pay on an on-chain Bitcoin transaction are not proportional to the amount. And that even for transactions that you think would have the same cost, you're spending one input, one output. With different transaction types, their fees are different, and so seemingly they really nerded out on it, and went and wrote up a huge table of the various transaction types and script types and the transaction sizes.
Yeah. It took me a few passes over this to start to grok it. But okay, off the top, what is the difference? What do we mean virtual size versus size? What does that mean?
Yeah. We have witness data, and that is not counted as regular data. It's like what? It's like discounted in some fashion. And I'm actually less of a on-chain person, so getting the facts of on-chain out of me is going to be a little bit harder. But yeah, the witness data in a Bitcoin script does not pay the same fee rate as data that isn't in the witness. And then I forget what the size difference is. I believe is it like a quarter? The witness data pays like a quarter.
I thought it was half.
Might be a half or a quarter. But it's basically discounted data in a Bitcoin transaction.
SegWit discount.
Which effectively allowed us to get some scaling benefits by allowing the witness data, in addition to the normal block data, to go beyond a single megabyte.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... yeah, the learning about, through Base58, actually, learning about the difference between bytes and virtual bytes and how that changed in SegWit was a real rabbit hole moment for me. Because it pulled me, for one, deeper into the Bitcoin protocol, why different trade-offs are made, and made me question some assumptions about the Bitcoin protocol, which was a cool experience that I had never done before that.
And it's like, definitely, what assumptions?
Well, to me, it felt like, once I actually learned about the SegWit discount, it felt like a sneaky block size increase, which ran counter-narrative to my non-technical understanding of SegWit from before I was a developer, because I kind of had learned about these things as just kind of a pleb who was listening to a lot of podcasts, paying attention to Bitcoin, and then I go back in and relearn it with some technical foundations, and I'm like, wait, this isn't what they told me. This is literally a block size increase, where the maximum size a block could possibly be used to be 2 megabytes fixed. And now there's this extra 2 megabytes of space that can be allocated for whatever goes inside the witness stack, which in theory, that was only supposed to, like, you know, at first we were only getting to like 2.4, 2.6 megabyte blocks for like really big blocks. But once obviously the inscriptions and the ordinal stuff came in, people started abusing this space in the witness to store more data and do it for cheaper.
So we had 2 megabyte blocks before. I think for some reason I thought they were 1 megabyte.
It might have been 1 megabyte.
No, I think you're right.
I think we went from two megabyte to four.
I know it's 4 now, for some reason I thought it quadrupled rather than doubled. But doubling makes more sense. I mean, I don't know. Again.
Either way, it's the we understand the concept. It's the concept, not the parameters that matter. Right. 1, 2, 21, 210,000, whatever. We remember these numbers sometimes. So we know what virtual bytes are. It goes through the different script types here. Can you name all of these?
Pay to pub key hash, pay to pub key hash. What is P2MS? Oh, still proposal phase. Pay to script hash. Pay to witness pub key hash, pay to witness hash,
pay to witness script hash,
pay to tap.
This is pay to multisig.
Oh.
I don't know what, I didn't understand this still in proposal phase, because like pay to multisig was the, pay to multisig came before pay to script hash, and it was like one of the original transaction types. Okay, we're not going to read that. But okay, so those are the script types. And then here's some other script types, sort of. I think it's P2QRH, which is still in the proposal phase. I think we misread that. Okay, so these are the like set in stone script types. These are the others. Coinbase, which is input only. Yeah. Can't spin the Coinbase. Alp return, output only. P2A, don't know what that is. Don't know what P2QRH is. Non-standard. Okay. And then non-standard is just like, like you just made it up. It's not according to the Bitcoin protocol, I think.
Yeah, it gets can get mined by consensus rules. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not standard. People don't use it with any regularity.
And so then we have the overhead, input field, output field. So the overhead, this seems like the fields that are required just by default in any transaction.
Right.
And then the inputs are variable, but each input must have out point, script sig, and the size of that is based on the length. Script sig length. Oh, wait. That's the byte that says this is about to be the length of the script sig, then the script sig, and then in sequence. And then, okay, output starts after that. So sequence and then witness items. Okay, so we see post-SegWit world, our transactions look almost the same. They have almost the same fields. But the difference is on the overhead, for one, we have this mark, this flag, which basically says this is SegWit. On the input, we have this the witness items. That's the one difference versus the sequence. I think you still have sequence. So actually the witness item is in place of the script signature. So that's like the signature that says you can spend the input of the transaction. And then the difference on the output, it looks like they have the same fields on the output. Yeah, script pub key. But then, of course, with SegWit, like the script pub key actually reveals the script. So whenever you're seeing stuff in the witness stack, that's always like on the output, on the spend. And then, yeah, he's basically breaking down for each of these what how much virtual bytes you can expect. That's okay.
It's a splasher.
And so, all of these, I mean, we have everything here, opportune, pay to pub key, raw, pay to multisig, one of one. And all of these have an overhead of 10. We go to 10.5. It's interesting. I don't know. I didn't see too many like special insights in this table, except for if you go all the way at the bottom, pay to tap root seems to be the most efficient, right? We have 10.5 bytes overhead, 57.5 to 57.75 on the input size, and then the output size, 43.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are some gotchas in there. Where you wouldn't expect the size to be what it is, but yeah, otherwise it does. SegWit did complicate things a lot.
Oh yeah.
And thinking about these things a lot, but that's the price of having global consensus, really.
Mm-hmm. I'd be curious. I almost want something like this. That's like an interactive calculator that lets me, I don't know. Kind of build like theoretical transactions and compare
them based on script types. It might exist. If you go in the comments, merch, and the OP get back and forth on it, and there might, at some point, they share a lot of links, and one of those links might be someone should have built this by now, if it doesn't already exist.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit, there's like, BitScript.app, which is sort of in that direction. Like, they have a transaction builder, but it's more of like a lot of these are framed as transaction parsers.
Yeah.
Versus like builders.
A lot of these are Stack Exchange posts, so maybe they don't actually have something that helps you. Yeah, because we have a lot of these things for Lightning. I just imagine they would exist for on-chain. Like Lightning, we have all these like decoders of for invoices and so, and explorers and things. Maybe that's something that would be a great addition to mempool.space, is a page where you can like interact, you can look at what is actually getting stored on the blockchain, what is possible to store on the blockchain. Be like a cool,
like a playground almost.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
It's free idea, mempool playground.
Yeah. I mean, they seem to have their hands busy.
Well, it's cool. Zap Rex Dentron. It's cool that you can kind of just go on the Stacker News and post your independent research and get the experts of Bitcoin literally like helping you, correcting you. We've got merch in here, sharing a bunch of resources. They're going back and forth on some technical details we're not going to even go into, but it's kind of cool to see the level of signal that you can just drill down into.
I mean, the detail here is insane. Like, I do not, I do not have the brain to produce this post. Like, my brain would, I would give up.
Yeah.
I, you know, I might be able to produce that first table, but after that, I'm, I cannot, I get eight, I get ADD of a certain kind.
Well, this is why it's good. We love the protocol devs. They're good at writing readmes. Readmes and tables.
Yeah.
But no, shout out to Rex Dintron. Thanks for sharing the awesome analysis. What do we got next? Microbolt V2 is here. What is this? What is this, Coop?
Coop, what is this? I haven't seen this before.
What is this?
It's my impression. It's my car impression. Microbolt is like, it's like a Raspi Blitz or a Umbral or a Start 9, I believe. It's like a software, a node package thing that allows you to kind of, with a GUI or at least a UI of some kind, at least a command line interface, create like a node with quite a few features. Like with the effort of installing, say, Bitcoin Core, you can get Bitcoin Core and Electors and LND and ThunderHub and these other applications running at the same time. So it kind of, it bundles them up. It's like a, what would you call these tools?
Node packages, node distributions,
node operating systems.
Docker compose.
Node Dockers, node Docker composers.
Yeah. Node in a box. I've heard that. Or node out of a box.
Node in a box is good.
But yeah, it seems cool. It's it seems to have a leaning towards the Central and South American audience, because we have the slash EN right here, but by default, you're in Espanol.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. But it says here, make your own Bitcoin node with Microbolt, simple, powerful, secure, flexible node implementation with everything you love from Bitcoin and more. But see, like node implementation, like implementation of what node?
Yeah, maybe that's wrong. Yeah. Maybe it doesn't translate.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like node. What would you call like brew, like homebrew on Mac OS?
Package manager.
Yeah. So it's like a Bitcoin software package manager.
Yeah.
Sort of. That's basically maybe the best.
2.6 faster on IBD.
Okay. Are they using...
That's a strong hero statement right there.
What are they doing?
They need to make this text a little bigger.
They might be... What do we have? Don't we have these?
Okay, let's see. Start your journey. Let's see.
Are they using checkpoints?
So we have Microbolt is more than a fork Raspi Bolt and a mini bolt, made for all kinds of computers, not only Raspberry Pis. This guide, blah blah blah. Okay, system Bitcoin. They have like features? Features. So Bitcoin. Direct trustless peer to peer, Electrum server, Blockchain Explorer, Lightning Noster.
It doesn't talk about IBD there.
Yeah.
Maybe that was something they added on later. But they might have, what is the other thing? There's UTXO.
Assume
UTXO. There you go. That's what it is. So maybe they forked that in before. Do we already have Assume UTXO?
They might just be working with the hardware better. Because they say, like, it seems to be that they're framing it as, like, this is optimized for Raspberry Pis and up.
Oh,
where it's
maybe.
Like, I feel like the sentiment around Raspberry Pis is that they're not quite enough for, like, the Umbral, the Start 9.
I see. Or, maybe it's not run in a Docker container, and that's kind of what they're suggesting. But, yeah, it's like a DIY node kit.
Yeah, I mean it's cool though. It's like more of these node packages, node implementations, whatever we want to call them. Also, think of a name for this damn thing. Node in a box. But yeah, more of this, please. It's really cool to see.
Yeah.
And something too, like prove me wrong that I've been totally burned on Raspberry Pis. I bought into the dream. of, you know, having 50 Raspberry Pis in my house and running a bunch of nodes.
A guy showing up to your house in a suit with a Raspberry Pi and a briefcase. Selling you the dream of a Raspberry Pi.
I mean, that some kind of hypothetical universe. We probably could have been there right now if we hadn't made psychedelics illegal. That's what door-to-door salesmen would be doing. They'd be selling Raspberry Pis.
Yeah, for free. They'd probably be trying to give them away.
Yeah. But yeah, it's cool. I mean, obviously, like, shares his updates here, a bunch of server stuff. We see that Bitcoin Knots is an option along with Bitcoin Core, with, like, Electrus, Mempool, L&D Lightning Node, Thunder Hub. That's pretty, you know, that's a pretty solid Bitcoin stack right there. You can do just about everything you need. So
yeah,
it seems like it's really viable.
That's something I missed, is that they have a cloud. So they're allowing you to deploy the setup in the cloud.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder what their prices are. Have you gone on over AlbiHub?
I have not. Here yet? Okay. I'm running it locally.
Okay.
Yeah. I run it locally for development. For testing WebLN with, because you can connect it to a node on RegTest, and it'll work WebLN. The browser extension will connect to it, which is awesome. But I know they're charging 21,000 sats per month, which is a very nice pleb node price. What is that, like $6 a month?
It's like $12. That's very cheap. I think that's. It's actually discounted from that right now. It's like 11. It's like supposed to be 21,000 and it's 10,000.
Wow.
And I'm just like, man, I can't compete with that.
That's crazy. I mean, they're doing something crazy with LDK where it allows them to scale it.
Yeah. I mean, so
you're more familiar with the enterprise nodes.
Yeah. Like they're definitely running a Kubernetes cluster. Okay. It's definitely like super lightweight LDK. They're all relying on one Bitcoin data source. That's for sure. And then it kind of just gets down to, like, how lightweight can you make each of those node implementation instances? And then can you take care of the liquidity management and, like, channel openings? And obviously, like, I don't know, Albi's just been building this whole ecosystem of tools.
Yeah, themselves. It's like they went outside in.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah they went to, like... From having the most abstracted kind of wallet and being in the most abstracted environment to, yeah, drilling all the way down to, you know, the next thing they would do after this is make their own node implementation. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. It is pretty interesting.
But shout out to Microbolt. Thanks for sharing.
Microbolt. Yeah.
Hadn't seen this before. Looks interesting, though. I'll try and come up with some questions. Have some reason to expand your FAQ page. I'm wondering if someone asked about the cloud hosting, because I couldn't find that on their website. Do you plan to add Tor support to better have the node on the Tor network? Coming from Start 9, blah, blah, blah. Tor and I2P are already available based. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, shout out. Excellent. Do it with Notepad. Is that the The IDE, Notepad +++.
Oh, it is. Wow.
Wow. Is Microbolt coded in Notepad?
Oh, Notepad. No, Notepad, I believe, is like Notes on Mac OS.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So
not Microsoft's IDE.
Not an IDE, I don't believe.
Okay.
It's a text editor.
Global liquidity in Bitcoin from Carl B. Menger.
Yeah. Yeah. So Carl B, this strikes me, most of this strikes me as AI written. It makes me wonder if Carl B has, most of Carl B's writing is AI written.
Do we call out
I call it AI stuff, but I think it's very, it's prompted to deliver specific content. So it's not like write me a 5-paragraph essay on the Bitcoin Lightning Network. It's more, I think there's probably pretty conscious prompting happening, which is interesting. Then it's really like sort of a cyborg essay, more so than just an AI one. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he writes about the liquidity cycle, you know, the general business cycle that we all hear about as Bitcoiners, and describes it: expansion, peak, contraction. you know, how we go through it, what it's caused by, mm-hmm. what happens during each part of the cycle, and then how that happens in how that drives potentially Bitcoin's cycles as well.
Okay.
And how the M2 expansion, we have a domestic dispute.
No, can you get me an extra charger from over there and plug it in? I think my computer is about to die. Actually, it is. I don't think so. We're just plugging in an extra charger. Sorry to interrupt you.
We have an energy crisis. blah, blah,
this right wouldn't now. Happen in Trump's economy, yeah. I'll tell you that.
Hurricane Milton.
That's my favorite thing about, actually, off topic, about the... It's plugged in, but I'm draining power too fast. My favorite things about, like, the presidential debates is when they're arguing, they're like, my economy did this. Well, my economy had balloons.
Yeah.
My economy had confetti. But, yeah. So, okay, liquidity cycle is like, because I've heard the term business cycle again and again, and that's, like, this idea of, like, this whatever 3-year or like, 10-year, like, growing of the stock market to new highs, and then it pops back down to lows, and then it kind of happens again, like whatever, boom and bust cycle.
Yeah, the boom and bust cycle. So that's more or less what we call the business cycle, or what most Bitcoiners understand is the business cycle, is that more or less this central bank liquidity cycle. And so he describes the liquidity cycle, what it looks like, what happens, and then goes and compares it to Bitcoin cycles. And, you know, I would say about 50% of Bitcoiners are very interested in charting and price and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so this would be more so appealing to that half. But it is interesting. I mean, I think the broad overview of the liquidity cycle is interesting, you know, kind of in the context of that, explaining M2 and how M2 might be one of the reasons, like the expansion and contraction of M2 might be one of the reasons why we see the Bitcoin price kind of be more volatile than it might be otherwise. Bye, mm-hmm. Jimmy.
Later.
Have a good weekend. Yeah. I think if you go down a little bit lower, I mean, I guess we could just reach an all-time high in M2 money, global M2 money supply.
What is that? 9,500?
9.5 trillion, I believe.
95,000 million. So, or wait, 95, billion.
95,000 billion. So it's 95 trillion. That's right. It's 95 trillion, the M2.
And the M2, okay, difference between M1 and M2, the M2 is the actual, like, not the assets. It's like the cash plus the whatever.
No, M1, I believe, is the like super liquid supply of money.
Uh-huh, okay.
And then M2 is like liquid equivalents that are like not super liquid.
Yeah, but effectively you can say like, okay, yeah. There's dollars in this.
They can be turned into money fast. So
this is including like real estate and stocks and bonds.
I don't know if it includes real estate.
Maybe not real estate, but maybe stocks and bonds.
Maybe. I'm not an economist, but okay. Yeah, that could, I mean, I think it's just roughly, I think it's like it includes credit and things beyond the actual like physical money supply is my understanding of it, but I don't.
Yeah, 95
trillion. I'm not a guy who likes this kind of stuff usually. But I mean, it's pretty 95 trillion, I guess. Yeah, because China just had their huge stimulus package, and then we let up on interest rates as well. And I think in here, Carl Bieminger mentions that we're probably going to be entering a new growth phase in the liquidity cycle.
Mm.
Like someone he likes, or someone. The AI likes or something said that towards the end of 2025 we can expect a peak in the next liquidity cycle. Yeah, there you go. Michael Howell. I don't know who that is.
Michael Howell.
He's a liquidity expert though.
I'm a liquidity expert according to Voltage.
According to my doctor, I'm a liquidity expert.
According to my urologist.
<That's way better.
Cool. Well, shout out Carl B. Keeping us thinking about global liquidity. I think we have one more here. I am not Satoshi Nakamoto. Subject of HBO documentary denies he invented Bitcoin. Who is the subject?
Oh, well, I haven't watched it. Have you guys watched the documentary?
I haven't.
I haven't either. I don't know if I'm going to. I might watch it just because it might convince my wife to be more interested in Bitcoin. Might give her another reason to think about Bitcoin, you know. It's like a normal documentary.
Yeah. I've heard from people that have seen it that it was like the first part of it's pretty good explanation of Bitcoin, you know, a nice like maybe show your friends and family like the first 30 minutes type of thing. And then it becomes like a Blockstream ad. And then like the last part of it is just like figuring out that Peter Todd is Satoshi.
Basically. Really? It's a Blockstream ad?
Well, I say Blockstream, like it's a lot of like Samson Mao doing the plan B or like flying around in his private jet and like trying to get countries to adopt Bitcoin. And then like what's his name?
Adam Back
just like being stoic and
he seems pretty chill. He seems pretty zen to me.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the third part is
who's Satoshi? We're figuring it out. And then like detective. So like Peter and mystery. Adam are being just like kind of interviewed by this documentarian and it's like very regular. Tell me about Bitcoin, tell me about the block size wars. And then at the end he's like, I think I know you're Satoshi. Like he like changes the angle to like almost like
oh, is that the clip yeah, that we saw that was shared everywhere? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So like that's the big reveal.
Where Peter's like laughing in his face.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So this specific story from CNN, I mean, this spread wide and far, which is pretty awesome. But it sucks that they made a mistake of calling Peter Satoshi. But Peter, you know, has come out publicly and said he's not. And that's what CNN is covering here. There was a great review on Stacker News. I think it was by, let me see. It's called, Money Electric by Simple Stacker. And they did a review of it. And I thought it was pretty great.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this one probably should have been in the top. Nice. Stackers are finicky with their zap sometimes. And then Peter responds as a top comment. It's recent, but if you go to top, if you sort comments by top, it'll... he's rusty. He's been using his own platform. So Peter Todd responds here. I guess Peter Todd's account was actually under a different name around the time that reply was made. And so Peter Todd changed it to Peter Todd and like doxed himself on that account. So he obviously didn't think there was a slip up made under that account.
It's Peter backwards.
Oh, it is.
Retep.
It sounds like an Egyptian god, or at least a high up in the Egyptian society.
Not a pleb.
Not a pleb in the Egyptian society. Retep. Okay.
That's interesting.
Proof of sacrifice.
So we were talking about this yesterday around the lab. And so I was remembering... So Peter Todd was something... In order for him to have been Satoshi, he would have been like 18 or 19 or something like that when he wrote in like 2008. And correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's something around that. Like he was like barely in a college around that time. And something I always remember from Super, one of Super's criteria for how he thinks about who Satoshi could be has a lot to do with Bitcoin Script. And his Super's rationale is that, okay, so Bitcoin Script is this very critical part of Bitcoin. And it is heavily, heavily based off of Forth. And Forth is this obscure, like, satellite communication language It was only taught in universities for a short period of time. Now, there's probably, you could probably look through Satoshi's code, and there could probably be 10,000 things you could find that are evidence against someone like Peter Todd being Satoshi. But, like, that's just one piece of evidence I look at, and I'm like, okay, in what world does 18, 19-year-old Peter Todd understand Forth and have inspiration for how he builds a stack-based language based off of Forth? It's like, maybe he was that dude. Like, maybe he was in the satellite club in high school or something like that, and we don't know. But this seems very unlikely. Like, Super's point, and, like, I feel this, is that Satoshi feels a little older. He feels a boomer.
I agree. He does seem older to me as well. But I don't, I mean, I think Forth might be where you land initially if you're looking to, like, prevent some kind of remote code execution. It's a very simple
totally language. Yeah, you go back to the foundations,
very restricted, and maybe that's like the first search you do, and that's like one of the first articles you read, and now you're designing a script language with Forth. I'm not saying that Peter is Satoshi, but I just,
you can see how
it can, yeah, I think it can happen, because yeah. The first API that I wrote out of college, for the first app I made, was written in PHP and used an XML API. Even though those were completely outdated at the time, but that was like just what seemed super. It seemed approachable to me for whatever reason, and it was just naive that I was just like, it doesn't matter what I use, I'll just use anything. And these are the first few things that I found articles on, and I read them and I used them. So that's a possible a path, but It would be very surprising to me if Peter Todd were Satoshi, just because I think Satoshi is he's pulling together several disciplines, which is very unlike a young man to do relative to an older person. Like, because an older person has more time to pull together disciplines, while a young person, we often have like prodigies in a singular activity. But infrequently, a kind of synthesizing of lots of experience. Like, that's where I see the difference between, or that's where I see youth is at a strong disadvantage in synthesizing, because they have less to synthesize, more or less. And Bitcoin seems to me a huge project of synthesis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's hard to imagine having the kind of perspective about Bitcoin that is both very forward-looking but also adopting a bunch of old and sound and true ideas. And it's just like, how do you even parse through all that information 18, 19 years in life? But hey, it's possible.
It's fun to talk about. But it doesn't matter who it is. And any serious attempt to find it out is nonsense to me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in bad faith or whatever.
Yeah. And I think the top comment here on this post, I think Peter Todd is going to sue HBO. I don't know about the legal precipice for this, but, like, good Lord, talk about, I mean, I would have trouble sleeping. Like, you just imagine the, like,
yeah.
What is it, like John Wick? Like, the force of all the assassins are coming for
you
now?
Yeah, El Chapo puts a hit out on you.
Yeah, it's about to be like John Wick 5 with Peter Todd. But yeah, I mean, that's very, very concerning. You know, if someone asked me to be in a Bitcoin documentary, I might have second thoughts now.
All right. Or not.
But no one's going to claim I'm Satoshi. Clickbait.
Canola oil, brother.
Hey, my battery's actually going up now. I currently have three chargers plugged
We're,
in.
We're energy independent.
Mm-hmm.
Once again.
So yeah, the stackers are just ripping it apart. We have literally someone wrote an article inside of this article. But
this
seems
very AI to me, but
it does seem very AI. But yeah, it doesn't matter who Satoshi is. And that's kind of one of the beautiful things about Bitcoin, I think. But I think it's about time that we have some real energy and excitement on the show with Pleb Poet, a real stacker, not me, an intruder. Hey, we're not boring because we're just reading what the stackers have to say, right?
Yeah, you're accusing the stackers.
Yeah, we wouldn't accuse the stackers of that. All right. Later, stackers.
The fun begins.
But I think I have understood that car adds a lot. Car adds a lot to the show.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, don't want to.
I realize that now.
Oh. And well, you're kind of biased against your partner.
We miss you, Car, and good for you for getting away for a weekend.
Yeah, Car's on a field trip.
Enjoy it.
What do you think he's doing right now?
I think he's praying right now, honestly.
Like on the ground, right? Or.
Probably.
Standing.
Prostrate, that's what they call that, on the ground.
When it's on the ground, when you have like the little kneeling plate?
Yeah.
That's prostrating?
Kneeling pad, I don't know.
Does that like have any relation to the body part?
Yeah, prostate.
Yeah, there's probably some like Greek.
I don't know, it's like in hymns I know, like really old hymns.
Okay.
I wanted to respond to one thing that you said earlier about synthesis. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not disagreeing with your point, but I think it is possible that young people can do synthesis quicker.
I agree. That makes a lot of sense. Yes. Their brain is more pliable.
Yeah.
And so they should be able to do synthesis quicker.
Yeah.
They can manage to get the experience, then their synthesis will be more powerful.
Exactly, yeah. It's like it's a measure of like how deep can that synthesis go when you're so young.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's not the synthesis doesn't improve as you age. It's mostly like the raw material, which is experience.
Right.
That's fair. All right. That's great.
Cool. So what happens now?
Now we go to top. We're in top already, so you go to stackers.
We're going to look at stackers of the week. Here we are.
We have a hider.
It's what we expected, exactly, right?
We have a hider. That's probably Satoshi at the top there.
That's Satoshi there,
number
one. We
should get HBO to cover this segment.
And number four is the reporter of...
coins.
Yeah. No. Number four in hiding is the reporter from the documentary.
I see.
Just checking
He's trying to catch up to Satoshi.
Yeah. Checking on the conversation, the reaction, and all that.
Wait, who is number one? Who do you think?
We're not allowed to say that, are we?
I don't think we actually know, for
but
one.
You can speculate, because
there's
you're
much.
Three.
Right.
Well, I am nuked. Like, I do not. I do not get many points and rewards for my activity. So I get like a fifth, I think, of.
Oh, so you like hard coded just for your account?
Yeah, me and EK are totally nuked. Like, we cannot. It's very unlikely we get the top ever.
Okay. Oh, EK is down here, number 11. Are we allowed to look further down?
You are allowed. This is your show now, your car today.
Okay.
Or this half.
Hello, I'm Carr, and here I am. Okay, I just wanted to see.
Dude, 33. It's a good numerology right there.
Yeah, I've been getting great numerology this week. Somebody zapped my post to 2222, which is pretty good.
Wow, that's pretty
good. You know,
that means
I'll
something
that.
Important. Well, those add up to 6, and 33 adds up to 6 as well.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. Well,
something's going on.
Yeah, something real is happening.
Something real is happening. The stars and stuff are aligning. So now we're going to look at the top cowboys.
Yeah.
And I must introduce this segment as the most exciting segment in all of Bitcoin podcasts.
I think it's supposed to be the best.
The best.
The best. So Carr originally announced it as the most boring segment in the world.
Right.
And then
in the world.
Yes, and then now he started saying it's like the best segment
in of Bitcoin. All Bitcoin podcasts, right?
Something like that. You might know better than me, actually.
I mean, I thought that's what I said.
You might have. I might have. I'm sorry. I might have. I think I'm missing car, and so I'm playing car, where I just interrupt you in the middle of your sentence.
But who's the top Cowboys? Is this what we expect to see?
Yeah, it looks like it hasn't changed much. Looks like it's stayed pretty consistent.
Yeah, I I recently lost like my longest streak ever, which is pretty sad.
Oh no! How long did you go?
37.
That's your longest streak.
That actually is my longest streak. So
that's
sorry.
Pretty good, though. That's pretty.
I know
solid.
It's weak, but I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't have an excuse for it.
It takes a certain constitution.
Well, I also don't. I it's not revealed to me like what earns you the Cowboy of the Day, because
you have to pay a lot of attention when you're on the site.
You have to pay.
No, you have to pay attention. I mean, Austin knows.
It's an amount of sats you spend. That's what you're saying.
I'm not saying anything. I was saying you have to pay attention to what you're doing on the site, and then when it happens, you know. We're at a huge disadvantage because the code is open source, so people just look at it. But if it weren't, it'd be an actual
mystery. It's
too
bad I don't know how to read code.
But Austin knows how to tell. You know how to read your husband, who knows how to read code.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Have you ever smelt a microphone?
It has. Does yours smell weird?
It kind of smells like car.
It smells like lotion? Do you think it lotions his face?
Probably, like, I don't know, some type of oil.
Do you think he exfoliates?
Probably. Okay, what happens now?
Now?
Oh, we talk favorites? Or did we do that already?
No, we did that already. We did favorites already. I thought, didn't we? No, we didn't go over favorites. Yeah, what is your favorite story of the week? We should have done favorite story before this. Actually.
I was going to bring up the one you already brought it up. The guy, the review of Electric Money.
Oh, okay, that was your
Money
favorite.
Electric. Well, I just thought, yeah, I mean, I appreciated this because it was a good review, and it I'm not going to watch it, so I appreciate this information about it because I still am curious.
You're boycotting it?
No, I don't really like watch a whole lot of stuff.
Okay. What do you do with your spare time?
Play Stardew Valley.
Oh, I hear that's good.
It is good. Shout out Stardew Valley players out there.
Shout out Stardew.
But yeah, so we already talked about this. So what did you like?
I liked The Disappearance of an Internet Domain. That one was pretty good. That was shared by EK.
Okay, Disappearance of an Internet Domain. 2,871 sats, 19 comments. Tech territory. Baby boy.
That was pretty.
That's what was
good.
Missing. That's what Austin was missing. Because he
right.
doesn't even watch this show.
It's the little bit of flair.
What did you like about this?
I just thought it was an interesting, news article that happened. Is that the .io domain is going to go away?
Oh, getting rid of an .io domain. So that's odd.
Yeah, apparently the Brits, they owned this Indian Ocean island.
Okay.
Or islands, something like that. I think it was an island country. No, wait. No, they own the islands, and there's one country in the islands that they are giving the ownership of the islands to.
Okay.
And I think because it's known as the Indian Ocean Islands, they were given the .io domain. But IANA, the people that run top-level domain names, have a policy like where a country goes away, within 3 to 5 years, the domain name has to go away.
Whoa. If a country goes away, because it's changing ownership?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. The concept of countries changing ownership is pretty crazy.
It is.
What do you think that exchange looks like?
I don't know. But the Marius people thought for a long time that the country belongs, or that Britain was unfairly occupying them.
Probably true.
So the British government handed over the islands under the treaty was that Britain gets their military base, which is, you know, really important to them, apparently, for a 99-year lease. And otherwise they handed over them the islands.
Whoa. Okay. A lot of people use .io.
Yeah, I had a .io.
What did you have
there? I had pain.io. There was a product I launched that would help you build websites for your apps. If like you had an iOS app and you wanted people to find you via search engines or whatever, this would be like a web page builder for that.
Interesting.
And I had pain.io. A guy, and then I didn't really pursue the project very much. A guy emailed me and said his last name is Pain. He was trying to he was conning me. And I didn't realize it at the time. This turned out to be sort of a normal con you would do to get domains for cheap.
Yeah.
Dang. Anyway, but now he's fucked, and he deserves it.
Well, maybe he's just been collecting all of the pain.anything, though. Because why would you specifically want I.O. if your last name is Pain?
Well, it was a very popular domain name many years ago.
Yeah.
Like for tech products.
Yeah.
And so he was probably going to try to turn it into a product himself, because his name was not something Pain. I later found out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's probably just squatted on it and tried to resell it. Mm-hmm. But now it's not worth anything.
He's sasquatted on it.
Yeah. As a big, hairy person. He owned it.
Was IO supposed to mean, like, information something? Or, like, what was the attraction to that domain?
Oh. Yeah. Input, output.
Oh.
So you're like, when your computer talks to your hard disk, it's doing I.O. Mm-hmm. When it talks to the network, it's doing I.O. Mm-hmm. It's inputting things to the network and or getting input from the network and outputting things to the network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is interesting. Cool. Cool stuff, EK. There was something else that EK posted that I thought was interesting. Maybe we'll find it, but maybe not.
Maybe not.
Now, is that all? What else happens?
I think that's it.
I ask you, what are you going to do with your weekend?
Yeah, what am I going to do with my weekend? I'm going to ship some code, do the newsletter. I might cry. Not really.
Would you really cry? I feel like, because you've proclaimed yourself to be someone who doesn't laugh. I can't imagine.
Does that mean I can't cry?
I imagine that excludes crying as well, yeah.
What do, laugh more or cry more?
Oh, I don't really cry either. Yeah, I do. So Jan is right. One doesn't come without the other, really.
And that sound that he just made was not laughing. It was sort of...
It was the sound of repression.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, hell yeah. What are you doing this weekend?
This weekend, I don't know. It's Big Weekend. I've named it. What are we doing?
It's named Big Weekend.
Austin is shipping code. PlebDevs is shipping PlebDevs. And I am playing Stardew Valley.
Hell yeah. What's the best thing in Stardew Valley?
So I recently just acquired an ostrich.
Okay.
My farm started. It's a farming simulator. I have one ostrich so far, but the ostrich is producing eggs that I can incubate, so I can soon have many ostriches.
Wait, with only one ostrich, it like clones itself into an egg.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a Stardew Valley thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because that's how it works.
Is Stardew Valley the game that was created by like an auteur? Is that one?
What does that mean? That word?
Auteur is like kind of, you know, they write, direct, and star in their own movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so this was made independently by one guy and he did it all. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Something Monkey is the guy.
Yeah, I wrote something.
Or Ape. Shoot. I can't remember. But yeah, that's it.
Cool. That's excellent. So that is happening.
And hey, come back. Just come back up here. Yeah, just come back up here.
All right. Wardrobe change.
Wow.
Gender change.
All right. Cheers, Stackers. We'll see you next week. Are we going to be live from Atlanta next week or car? No, wait. That's 2 weeks from now. We're going to be in Atlanta. You're not coming to Atlanta, are you?
I might not. I have to do other things, possibly.
Okay. Well, you should consider it. I just bought my plane ticket today, so I'm pretty excited. You're That's right.
Me. Hell yeah.
That's right. So another great week. Thank you, Stackers. We will see you in the near future.